Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Yahoo buys RockMelt and sort of melts the whole thing down. Squiggle is great for remote coworkers. Watching for sales on Pinterest just got easier. And stay the night in a Twitter hotel. All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 122, recorded Friday, August 2nd, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 1 million high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code SocialHour8. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special episode of The Social Hour because Amber and I are both in our respective, well, I was going to say childhood homes. I guess that's just one of us, huh, Amber?
Yes, I am home at my parents' house in Prince Edward Island for 2 weeks, and I'm hanging out in their basement. If you're watching the live version of this, you'll see I have beautiful wood paneling behind me. If you're listening to the audio version, just imagine a 1970s basement, and that's kind of where I am with very good technology, however, I will say, because my brother and I have brought over all of our gadgets. So there's a lot of cool stuff down here in this old basement.
It's like That 70s Show meets podcasting.
Exactly.
Well, I am also at not my childhood home. I move around a lot, but my current home, because I had a bunch of furniture being delivered today that could not be delivered any other time except the least accessible day for me anyway. So thanks to everybody for bearing with us. But hopefully, you know, Amber and I are pretty good at being in two different places. So this might just seem like a completely normal show to everybody else.
Yes.
All right, let's get into the stories of the week. This first one comes from you, Amber. A company called Rebel Mouse has raised quite a bit of money. What's going on?
Yeah, so this was an interesting story kind of floating around the web today. Rebel Mouse, we've talked about this before on the show. It's a startup that allows users to take all of their social media updates and combine them in one place. So they almost have their own homepage, their front page on the web. So in a simple aggregator in many different ways. I think we've only talked about Rebel Mouse a couple of times based on this TechCrunch article. They've just announced that they've raised $10.25 million. Sarah, congratulations to them, because I imagine they're pretty happy right now. It gives them a lot of investment to be able to build on the company, try new things and more advertising opportunities since they have money to invest in the technology. However, I can't help but think when people get money like this, companies get this type of funding, that I just wonder, you know, it just seems like a lot. Sarah, what do you think?
Well, gosh, I mean, it kind of seems like a lot to me, considering that it's like a place to be able to check a variety of social networks in one place. Not that Rebel Mouse does not do that well, but there is certainly a lot of competition in that space. I mean, there's, I don't know. I mean, you're right. You know, it's funny. There's something about the name Rebel Mouse that throws me off because when I first started the story, I was like, "What? No, what does the technology do again? It's something about trackpads or no? It's not. It's a social, you know, front page for everything, and I love the idea of that." At the same time, I've never really found the service that I think, oh, this is so much better than all the others. This is my one-stop shop for everything that's going on in all my social networks. I'm never really going to log into any of them directly again. I kind of always seem to go back to checking them and compartmentalizing them, like, oh, I've got an hour. This is going to be my Facebook time, rather than see everything dumped in together, even if it's laid out nicely. And I'm not really sure why that is, but maybe the team at Rebel Mouse is going to use the money that they've raised to convince people like me.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I it's one of those things where I'm very happy for the company, but it's a service that I've checked out a few times, but never really felt the need to go there. And I think there is a lot of competition in the space, and I don't think it's easy for a company like this to get that amount of money and to continue to be able to, you know, really be able to realize the full potential of what they could do, because I think for users, you know, they're so fickle. Nonetheless, we'll keep an eye on that. And also, another service we've talked about before, Sarah, is RockMelt. Now, it was a long time ago when we talked about this really interesting web browser, and it looks like they were just acquired by Yahoo. And I think more than anything, based on this article on the Next Web, it appears that Yahoo has once again acquired the talent behind this particular technology, not necessarily the product itself.
Yeah, it's interesting. RockMelt, I remember when RockMelt launched, gosh, it was a couple years ago, maybe even 3 years ago now. And a bunch of us tried it out. The idea is that, you know, a social browser kind of reminded me of, you know, the next generation of Flock. If we all remember the Flock browser that was supposed to pull in a lot more media, like photos from Flickr and that sort of thing. And so RockMelt was the social browser. And it was the same kind of thing where I never had anybody say, wow, RockMelt is a piece of garbage, but it was hard to get people to stick with it because we're all just so used to some other kind of browser that just sort of does one thing. And the RockMelt team acquired by Yahoo. Yahoo has bought so many companies in this last year, Amber. It's ridiculous. We've got Gopal Go. We've got Tumblr, Astrid, Sumly, Lexity was just a couple of days ago, Milewise. The list goes on. I mean, Yahoo is on an absolute tear. I just wonder, and RockMelt's going to be shut down, according to the team. The products will be completely ceased to exist by the end of this month. So you've got pretty much a whole month because we just started August. Current users will be able to export their existing content as OPML files. So it's sort of par for the course, I guess, when companies like this get acquired. But I just wonder what Yahoo wants. If it's not the browser, I guess they've got you know, good feelings about the team and what they might be able to build for Yahoo.
Yeah, you know, I'm just reading the towards the bottom part of this article on the Next Web, and it says, according to All Things D, Yahoo paid $60 to $70 million for RockMelt. $60 to $70 million. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we should be asking the question, you know, what the heck is Yahoo doing really at the end of the day? Because we've talked about this before, that with that type of money, they could easily go out and hire a team of developers to develop new technology that they planned on keeping. And it's an interesting strategy. I mean, I think with Yahoo buying and acquiring all these different companies, it's one of those things that, is it going to be able to save them? I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something, but I just
don't see it. The number is so high for a talent acquisition alone. Not that the team is not very capable of great stuff. I'm sure they are, and I'm sure Yahoo knows that. And it kind of leads me to wonder, well, in situations like this where clearly the product, anybody who's using RockMelt as the browser right now, they're on the losing end of this whole thing because you just don't have a product that you like anymore. And that's you know, unfortunate, and it happens quite a bit. Apple bought Lala went away. Facebook bought FriendFeed, took a while, FriendFeed went away. So same idea here, but what if the team had something really, really great that was going to be the next iteration of what they had been working on for the last couple of years, because RockMelt, quite honestly, hadn't really caught on in masses. And Yahoo says, yeah, we want this. We're just going to pay for this new idea that the rest of us haven't heard about yet.
Yeah, I know. We'll keep an eye on Yahoo for sure. Now, this was an interesting article I found. I just did a quick search through Google News to find out what was happening in the social media space, to kind of dig up some new links outside of things like Mashable. And I came across this article that is all about Vine super users. And this is a small business article that's on Fox Business that says some super users are, in fact, making a living on Vine by creating their own videos for brands. You know, there are examples of brands working with independent Vine producers. I think they're calling them Vinographers or something like that. Brands from AT&T to the list goes on here to eBay, Dick's Sporting Goods, and no talk really about the type of money that some of these super users are being paid. But I think it really opens up an interesting conversation about digital marketing and how brands are going more to individuals to create content than agencies.
No kidding. I mean, if you would have told me hey, Sarah, if you've just got a couple of great ideas, you can create a little commercial for Clorox or, you know, Procter and Gamble or something like that. And they'll pay you, you know, per view or per 100 views. Boy, I would have tried to get on that a long time ago. But especially because it's kind of fun. I think we all think of people who work in advertising as having some special skill. It's like, oh, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to write copy or make up slogans or, you know, put together some sort of a storyboarded ad, you know, Mad Men type of stuff. But the people who are best at some sort of video medium like Vine or Instagram video or something that's very short form and it's very artistic, but in a specific modern sort of a way, those are some of the best people to put together stuff like this. So it's really interesting to hear. And it sounds like a few, not that many, but a few of these people are making colossal amounts of money. But it's kind of cool to realize that, you know, again, it's not necessarily how much experience you have with selling something. It's thinking outside the box and being able to use these new tools that a lot of people who have worked in this industry for a long time are just not up on.
Yeah, you know, and I think for most of the brands, what they're obviously going after is just the distribution channel. You know, you have these individuals, they mentioned one in the article, someone on Vine who has more than 300,000 people who are following them. Now, just to think about those numbers, Sarah, is kind of interesting as well, because Vine is so new. You know, imagine Vine launches and all of a sudden you jump on, you're an early adopter, and you build up this huge community there. And then 6 months later, you're working with some of these big brands and your entire career has changed. I mean, that's just how fast I think things are happening right now in social media. So my advice is always to a lot of people asking me how to make a dent in the social media world and kind of get ahead is to try out some of the new tools because they do grow pretty quickly. And I guess, you know, Vine is no exception.
Apparently not. Well, you know, good luck to everybody who's found some success on Vine. Amber, I wish I could say that I've seen any of these videos, but I guess I'd have to go to Vine more regularly in order to see them.
Yes.
Although I've got some news for you. Well, I don't know if we'd call it news, but it's something that I'm a little bit excited about. So before the show, we started a little late for anybody who's watching the live show because I had to move up a bunch of dining room chairs from the UPS guy who wouldn't help me. And I live on the third floor. It was not really all that fun. I'm basically in the middle of a little bit of a home remodeling project. Great. Got a new couch this morning, got some chairs, things are happening. Well, I've been working with this woman who is like an interior designer. She's, you know, she works with lots of people who can spend lots of money for this sort of thing. I'm not one of those people, but we have some similar friends. So she's kind of doing me a favor. And it turns out that she puts together these lookbooks for people on Pinterest.
Ooh, neat.
And it's, yeah. And it's it's like, she said, oh, you know, are you on Pinterest? And I was like, well, no, I mean, sort of. I could look at your Pinterest board if you put together something. And sure enough, she had put together all of these like, hey, do you like these chairs? What about this rug? I think this could be a really cool plant for that little corner that you don't know what to do with. And the two of us can kind of comment and go back and forth. And it is so much fun. Amber, I've spent so much time on Pinterest the last week that all of a sudden I'm like, this is why everybody likes it so much.
Very cool. That's awesome, Sarah. And I'm sure you saw this article then talking about Pinterest sending alerts when the price drops on pinned items. So if you keep using it, who knows, you may save some money too, Sarah.
Exactly. So this is one of the great things about, you know, my little project, and I'm sure some people out there who use Pinterest, you've got to have had success with the social network the same way, is that many of what my designer friend has pinned is stuff for sale. You know, she says, I think this would be a cool coffee table. It's from West Elm. You click through. Eventually, I'll go to West Elm's page. Well, there was a coffee table that she showed me the other day, and it was a little bit too much for my budget. So it's like, well, I like it. But gee, I wish it was, you know, $200 less. And then I could, you know, seriously consider it. Pinterest is adding a feature that'll alert you when something like that coffee table that I love but is just too much for my budget drops in price. It's a little bit like it's like an app shopper, you know, for app stores. A lot of people say, well, I don't want to pay $10 for that app, but you know, if it goes on sale, then I'll come back. Same idea with Pinterest. And I think this is really smart for the Pinterest team because they know there are a lot of people who are using it in the same way that I've been using it, where it's not just looking at pretty things. These are potentially purchases.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we talked about a stat a couple episodes ago where we talked about how many people are sharing content on Pinterest. And if I'm right, it was 16% of the content that's currently shared via social media is shared on Pinterest, just showing us again that Pinterest is growing phenomenally. You know, Sarah, I think we're going to look back. Well, now you're using Pinterest more, but I think we'll look back on this in a year and just see Pinterest as being one of the top social networks out there, you know, right up there, maybe not quite with Facebook, but well on its way. So that's a very cool feature. And I think it changes the whole shopping potential as well for Pinterest.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it keeps people interested. You know, if you haven't looked at a board in a while, oh my goodness, some things are on sale. It's Pinterest is actually, it has been so helpful to me and just kind of fun to browse, particularly on my iPad. I really like the Pinterest iPad app that I'm sort of like, geez, Amber, where we been? A little late to the game here. It's fun.
I know. Slow
after
to
all.
It. I know. This is kind of an interesting article, Sarah. You found this one about Facebook rolling out embedded posts. And I don't know a lot about this, but it seems pretty obvious based on the headline what you can do now.
Yeah, exactly. Or what you'll be able to do. Facebook has some launch partners out of the gate, People Magazine, Huffington Post. The idea is that, okay, well, we see more and more often in a news article, for example, you know, you read something at CNN.com or whatever, and there will be embedded tweets in particular stories, sometimes to help unravel how a story unfolded. You know, there was a car accident and people on the scene are tweeting about it, that sort of thing. You see these with Twitter cards that are embedded in articles. Well, there's never really been a way to do that with a Facebook update. It's everything happens within Facebook. But especially because Facebook recently allowed users to start using hashtags. Well, you could always use hashtags, but hashtags that are actually clickable so that you can see more about crowdsourced information that might be based around a particular hashtag. That really lends itself to being open and in other public places, because if you have to be within the Facebook walled garden to see some sort of hashtag about Olympics, well, that's not really going to help the conversation unless you happen to be within Facebook. So this is really, I think, Facebook's next big step into having Facebook data all over the web. You can read it in your newsfeed, but it can also be embedded for emphasis in, you know, maybe a blog post or that sort of thing, or, you know, maybe see it on, you know, a news station where people could be pulling in Facebook updates. So I think this is probably a pretty good idea, Amber, especially because Facebook is not the place where I go to like alert people about news. That would definitely be a place for Twitter, because I feel like Twitter does get spread and embedded all over the web in a really easy sort of seamless way, probably partly because the updates are so short and Facebook doesn't have that same kind of limited character count. But I think it's a step in the right direction for Facebook.
Yeah, I think in the sense that, you know, like you said, it just opens things up a little bit for Facebook and opens up that entire experience to anyone online. You know, it's funny, Sarah, I don't know if you've had this experience with Facebook lately, but I literally log in there and I spend like 5 or 10 minutes there and I think to myself, what the heck am I doing here? I struggle a little bit with Facebook like I do with other social networks. I mean, Twitter, not so much because I feel like it's very obvious, but there's just so much going on Facebook. I mean, maybe, like you said, it gives them an opportunity to open that up and people will be able to get content elsewhere. But at the end of the day, I hope that it doesn't implode. But sometimes I feel like when I go into Facebook, it feels like it's just going to, you know, not be destructive, but there's a chance in a few years it won't necessarily be as popular as it is today.
Yeah, I agree with you. I find Facebook overwhelming. And yeah. there's a lot there. That's a good and a bad thing. But yeah, it's I'm not going to sit there and scroll through my news feed for very long. I miss a lot of stuff on Facebook. You know, I log in for events and there's some other stuff. And we're actually going to talk a little bit later. We're going to answer somebody's email that I'll bring up another Facebook story in a few. But in general, I think Facebook knows that it wants to be sort of an information source. And if it makes people like us, I would consider us, you know, power users of social networks. If we feel overwhelmed, well, they're definitely not getting everything that they can get out of the billions of people who are also using Facebook. So this might be a way to spread the information around a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for me, sometimes it just becomes almost like the vibe I get on Facebook when I log in, that it feels like, I don't want to say it's a negative place, but Twitter, I feel I get just that much more information there, and it's very forward looking. With Facebook, I just feel like it's just, you know, it's not that pleasant of a place. But who knows? We'll just keep an eye on it as we always do.
Well, quick reminder for everybody who's watching us live, you can just, you know, take a little 30-second nap. But for anybody else who wants to watch us live next time and might not be right now, we do record the Social Hour on Fridays. It's kind of Amber and my last hurrah before our weekend start. 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Twit Network. You can go to our website and catch up on any of our shows, or check on links to stories that we may have talked about that you would like to share with your friends. Be social in that way. twit.tv/TSH is the website for our show. Everything is there, including subscription links if you'd like to subscribe to the show. Hey, maybe you can't watch us on Fridays. That's okay. Oh, that was Aya's last week. Actually, I had forgotten about that. Yeah, because Amber, you were traveling. That was a really fun show. Aya's, he's a very social man, believe it or not. And if you have feedback for us, anything that we talk about, or you have questions or comments or ideas, stuff that you'd like us to cover, you can always email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. All right, let's take a moment to thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of our show. Social media solutions from SAP, we love them because it's so relevant to the stuff we talk about. I mean, Amber and I cover lots of enterprise stories as they pertain to social media. The two are intertwined more than ever. And in fact, if you work for a big company, a large enterprise, you know that customer service and support is of the utmost importance. And a lot of the feedback that you're getting is happening on social media. People comment about your product. They might complain about your service. They might have something to say about your brand. Maybe it's Facebook. Maybe it's a private blog, all that stuff. And you want to make sure that if you are representing a company, you are on top of it. With social media solutions from SAP, you've got a couple different components. There's a listening component. So it goes out and searches the social web. Where is my brand being talked about? Captures reports on conversation, helps you build better products, uses something called natural language processing. And that can kind of discern what mood somebody's in when they might drop a little reference about using your product. Or maybe that this is a customer that's sort of on the fence about whether or not they want to, you know, upgrade to your next service, and you'd like to reach out and help make that sale. That's all really important. Then, of course, when you want to reach out, you're engaging. So the engaging component of SAP helps you improve customer service and support, because you can set rules about which messages are going to which person on your team. Maybe there's two of you, maybe there's 20, maybe there's 50. Activity on the social media stream has to be engaged with, no matter where it is. And of course, you can drive sales that way. You solve customers' problems and they love you for it. And you rapidly respond to the feedback that your customers are giving you. So social media solutions from SAP gives you more than marketing, because it improves the customer service and support experience. Does this sound like something your company should be taking advantage of if you're not already? Probably. Go to sap.com/twit and you can take a guided tour. It's very, very informative. See for yourself more about how social media solutions from SAP works and can work for you. All right, let's move on to our social tip of the week. This actually has to do with Hootsuite, which is has historically been one of the most popular and Twitter clients that's been around a long time.
Yeah, and really works well as kind of a basic social media dashboard. And what's interesting is if you produce a bunch of content, video content in particular, and you want a better way to be able to manage that content and get analytics for it, Hootsuite has just teamed up with Vidyard, and there's a new app available that will allow you to manage that video content and also get stats on that content too. So you can push out that content to multiple social media platforms and also find out who's watching, who's sharing, how long they're watching, watching, their location, which is very helpful information. You can also test different splash screens. So, you know, Sarah, when you get that that frame that you choose from a video and you put it online, you can test whether one frame works better than another frame to figure out which one entices more people to click on the watch button, and a bunch of other information. So I think this is great for people, you know, if you're managing a social media account using Hootsuite and you want a better way to be able to share a bunch of video content, if you have your own video content library, this really opens up some great analytics options.
This is awesome. What a cool little service here. Vidyard.com/Hootsuite if you want to see more about what you can do there.
Yeah, it's really neat. And I think what's great is that I think so many people that produce video content don't have a great strategy to be able to determine the success of that video content and to be able to improve on the distribution of that content. So all of a sudden with a tool like this, you have all of these analytics and the opportunity to do so. So hopefully anyone who uses Hootsuite can give it a whirl. I'm going to try it out for sure and just get a sense of, you know, some of the cool features and functionality. And that is our social tip for the week.
That's great. I think, especially since we're in the you know, the video business ourselves, it can sometimes be really eye-opening, especially for people who are getting into video content, who maybe don't have a lot of experience with some of the different methods of sharing video on the web. You know, you say, oh, keep it short, keep it concise. And yeah, that's easy to say. Yeah, I got it. But it can be really interesting to be like, wow, everyone seems to be, you know, bouncing out of here after 30 seconds and all of our good stuff didn't happen till the third minute, you know, that sort of thing. It can just be really helpful to make content that, you know, people are going to be engaging with.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think just simple things. I know often when I go to YouTube, if I watch a video, sometimes it is just that screen grab that someone has added to that video that makes me want to watch it. I mean, there are simple things like that, that the more you learn about how video works online and how to measure the success and to tweak things here and there to be able to get more people viewing those videos, I think the more helpful it would be for people who spend a lot of money on video. Let's face it, you know, not all of us are able to create little 6-second videos that go viral on Vine. Maybe there's just a few people who can do that. And for the rest of us, it costs a lot of money to have a good production. And that means you want to be able to measure really well. And this tool is just a cool little tool that I think will help a lot of people.
I love it. Yeah. If anybody has sort of, I don't know, if you use Vidyard and I don't know, you noticed something that really stood out to you, do let us know. It's always nice to have feedback from people who are using the tools that we talk about here on the show as well. Again, vidyard.com. And yeah, give it a whirl. What about our spotlight? Well, we've got two spotlights actually, Amber, but you've got something that's going to make your resume more creative.
This is just an example of an individual who came up with a really creative idea for his resume. So he launched a website, and you can visit this site at liugle.com. And this is this individual. His name is Chris. He's a copywriter. This is his resume. So his entire website looks like Google search results. And those Google search results will actually link out to certain places and have his LinkedIn account, his Twitter account, and other information, and also a little profile on Chris in terms of things that came up, I'm guessing, from like a Google Plus experience. And his whole website looks like someone just searched in Google and found all of this helpful information. So I know it's a little bit hard to explain, but just imagine you search for Chris Liu via Google, or imagine what comes up. He's actually created that as his own website, and it's kind of neat.
It's seamless. I mean, besides the fact that in the upper left-hand corner, you see Google, and down at the bottom, when you see, you know, that there's apparently 10 pages of search results, you've got a Google with a bunch of U's here. But yeah, everything's clickable. Yeah. I was fooled. I was completely fooled. I was like, oh, well, lucky him. He has all 13 results on the front page of a Google search about him. But this is really cool, especially since he says he's an aspiring copywriter. So I'm sure a lot of this is, you know, it's submissions of writing samples and stuff that shows off his talents. And you get a very good idea of where he's from, where he went to school. He speaks several different languages. That's all that. I mean, this is What a creative little thing.
It's very creative. I know. I love it. I mean, I think for anyone, like you said, in the creative industry looking for work, you really need to be able to stand out from all of the boring resumes that many companies get online. And so he's just done something that I've never seen before. And it's just fun to take a look at it and to see that the whole thing is functioning. You know, he basically, maybe he didn't like what it said in regular old Google results. So he created his own web page to kind of manipulate that and have all of the positive things about his life and what he does in a resume format that looks like Google search results. So very creative. And I'm sure we'll be hearing about him getting a job any day now, Sarah. We'll have an update on this one.
Yes. Hire that man. If he's good at that, he'll be a great copywriter. Indeed. Speaking of advertising. Hey, so our second spotlight is, this is actually a company. They reached out to me months ago, Amber, and I had thought, oh, this is really great. We have to feature it on the Social Hour, and kind of went to the back burner. And that's unfortunate because I think it's really, really great, especially for our audience. A company called Squiggle, and it's spelled a little bit weird. Squiggle. It sort of made me wince a little bit. I'm not so crazy about the name, but I am crazy about the service. The idea is, okay, well, if you work at Yahoo, you can't work remotely anymore. Not for a while anyway. But in many other companies, you do. Sometimes companies have people spread all around the world, or just, you know, people are traveling. You've got engineers that might be remote. Somebody, you know, might be on maternity leave. All sorts of reasons that you might be working and nobody can be in the same place as each other. The idea with Squiggle is it's a little bit like a Google Hangout, except that it's sort of passive. So let's say, you know, there's five people on our team and, you know, everybody who's involved with the Social Hour in some capacity. So it's you and me and Brian and Jason and Tony. And we all say at 9 a.m., we're all going to be sort of available. What we do is we're all part of an account on Squiggle, and we see each other basically just sitting at our desks. What's neat about it is that when you haven't decided to engage with somebody, if I don't have a question for you, I can just sort of check Squiggle and see, oh yeah, she's sitting there. And what it'll do is it'll send me a black and white screen grab of you every 30 seconds or so that updates, just so I can see, oh, she's there. I know that she's there, but I don't necessarily need to see like video of you working and that sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. It kind of takes out the question of, oh, Amber, are you sitting there? Let me IM you and see what happens. So it's very cool. And then once you click on somebody's image, then you connect and then you've got a little video chat going on. It can be between two people or a group. And in fact, the Squiggle people have a little YouTube demo to give you an idea of how it looks. We can run that.
It'll immediately connect me. Hey, Eric.
How's it going?
Hey, I just wanted to check up on that bug I posted in the stream earlier.
Number 64.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's all done. That's been done for a while.
Awesome. I'll just bring Matt in on this conversation and see if he had a chance to check out the changes. So if I want to bring Matt into the same conversation, I simply click on him as well, and it puts me into connection. And hey, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Did you have a chance to look at those changes that Eric made to the bug?
Yeah. There may be a revision, but it looks pretty good. I think that, it'll be good.
Awesome. All right. Cheers. I'll chat to you later, guys.
Yeah.
And then I simply leave the discussion. There we go.
So you guys get the idea here. And obviously, you know, there's four people, so it looks really good. But you can have more or you can have fewer. I think the team said something like, you know, it works really well with up to about 12 people at a time. So I think, you know, Amber, it definitely depends on how big your team is, but especially for certain departments, you know, maybe when there is a smaller group who are all working on one particular project. And it's just one of those things where you really want to be able to check in with people on a regular basis. There's probably a little bit of, you know, some people saying, well, I don't really like the idea of having to prove that I'm sitting at my desk all the time. And, you know, this doesn't really seem like it's that flexible if I'm working remotely. But I think for some employers, this would give them a little bit of a sense of relief that it still assumes that there's a grown-up, hey, we're all working, we're all a team type of a thing. But it also gives people flexibility that, you know, in some companies that's really expected these days.
I love it. I think it's a great idea. I mean, it's not as though someone in a company needs to necessarily sit there the entire time all day, you know, for 8 or 9 hours. But there are times, I'm sure, when people who work remotely are sitting at their desk for, you know, a couple hours because they have to dive into something. And I think in terms of collaboration, it just makes it that much easier having a tool like this. I think it makes perfect sense, especially for, like you said, for some smaller organizations and just to be able to, as much as possible, recreate that face-to-face experience, because there are things that you just miss out on when you're working remotely. I mean, I'm a big fan of working remotely, but there are things that you miss out just in terms of being able to quickly ask someone a question or bounce something off someone. And to be able to recreate that in the virtual world, I think is a huge benefit. And maybe, you know, maybe the Yahoos of the world will implement something like this and let people go home.
Exactly, man. You know, sometimes we just don't want to wear pants. It makes us more productive.
Sarah's not wearing pants right now, are you?
You'll never know. I might not be. It's the beauty of being remote. That would have been very scary for that poor UPS delivery man if I had moved all those chairs upstairs without any pants on. Or maybe it would have made his day. Hard to say. All right, let's take another break and thank Shutterstock.com for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. At Shutterstock, you can find not only the perfect image or video for your next creative project, speaking of video, it could be, I don't know, for your website. Maybe you work for some sort of a publication. Maybe you're putting together an ad, a video of some kind, just any real type of project. Sometimes you need media. You can choose from over 1 million high-quality stock video clips. Some are animation, some are motion graphics. They have clips in a variety of digital formats. So no matter what kind of project you're working on, you're guaranteed to have media that's going to work for you. Most are in HD. I mean, they look really, really nice. What's the best part about these video clips is that these are professional filmmakers and animators that are contributing to Shutterstock. So the quality is great right off of the bat. Plus, Shutterstock makes sure that each video is good enough. They're basically going through and weeding out what's not worth it and putting only the highest quality, best content videos to their collection before you see them. Plus, they add over 10,000 video clips each week. So every time you visit, you're going to see cool new videos that you never even knew existed. In fact, just yesterday during iPad Today, Leo and I were trying to like get inspired just by searching for videos and images just to get inspired to write that blog post. You know, we searched for Red Wedding, actually, and we got all sorts of crazy results. Shutterstock sources video clips from around the world, puts them at your fingertips. And if you're working with a team, speaking of working in teams, sophisticated search tools make it easy for you to find the clips that are perfect for whatever project you're working on, be able to categorize them, but also to share them with your other team members. You can save your video assets to a clip box. It's nice because then you can access them anywhere and send other folks in your team to look at them. Say to your team member, what do you think about these? Is this kind of what we're thinking about for that video? This is going to be perfect. We can roll it in to our little edited project. You can choose between individual clips or video packs, and you can download clips in HD, or though they also have standard def and web formats as well. So lots of flexibility there. You can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. Everybody likes free, right? You don't need a credit card. Just start your account. Start using Shutterstock. Help imagine what your next project could be like. The videos will blow you out of will really, really blow your mind. Almost like blow you out of the water. It won't do that. And you can save video selections you find to your clip box. Once you say, I love Shutterstock, I'm ready to purchase a plan, use the offer code SocialHour8. So Social Hour and then the number 8. That's because we're in August, the 8th month of the year. And new accounts will receive 30% off any new package. It's a great savings. Shutterstock.com. And for 30% off new accounts, use the offer code SocialHour8. And we thank Shutterstock for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. All right, let's get into some of our feedback. Speaking of being social, I got a voicemail from Daniel. It's kind of an interesting story about the ownership of Facebook pages.
Hi, Amber and Sarah. My name is Daniel. I had a question for you about some ethical implications around a Facebook page. About a year and a half ago, my wife noticed that a popular street festival in our hometown did not have any web presence at all, so we created a Facebook page for it. We initially contacted the Chamber of Commerce in our hometown and told them what we were doing and asked them if they'd like to be involved. At the time, they said no. A year and a half later, we had done a lot of engagement with the audience, and we reached a Facebook count of about 1,500 people, which is a lot considering the population of our hometown is only about 8,000 people. Recently, we tried to log in to post some updates to that page, and we found that the page had been taken away from us. Apparently, a member of the Chamber of Commerce had come in and used a Facebook feature to claim the page. Even though we had contacted them about a year and a half before about being involved, they now saw that we had created a lot of engagement and just chose to do that instead of contacting us about it. So my question is this. First of all, do you think this is ethical of them? Second, what do you think that we should do in this situation? Thanks, and I look forward to hearing from you.
Yikes.
Wow, that's a great question.
It seems pretty shady.
Yeah, I think that happens a lot, though. I've heard this particularly from brands where an individual who's a big fan of the brand will create a page and get fans to come to that page, and it may have the brand's name in it, and they may want ownership of that experience and be able to divert all of the fans to their own account. So I have heard of situations like this, and in that case, brands can go and request that those pages fall underneath their ownership. But this one, because it seems like such a community event, I'm surprised that the Chamber of Commerce would do that. And from an ethical standpoint, I think they probably should have contacted the page owners and asked them to collaborate in some way and get them involved. I mean, I think the number one rule, Sarah, we've talked about this before on the show, is that your biggest social community is a group of influencers, and they've already built that on that page. So how do they expect those people to really be happy with what had happened, especially with the Chamber taking over the page? So I don't know how you get around it, but I wish him luck, because that's not necessarily a good thing for the Chamber to do.
Yeah, it seems odd, doesn't it? I mean, if they've got some sort of a street festival and the city says, we're not interested, it probably because they just didn't think that anybody would want to have a Facebook page about it. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, a good number of the entire population of the town is really interested. So, maybe we should take ownership. I mean, it's like 25% of the town wants, to be engaged. That's all fine and good. I mean, maybe there's a little bit of like, oh, okay, we've got a proven model here. But to not even contact the people who have put it together and done a lot of the heavy lifting as far as outreach and getting people to engage does seem, I mean, maybe they didn't want it to be shady, but I guess that's just the word that comes to mind to me. It's like, it doesn't really work that way. At the same time, I'm not sure as an individual what the recourse really is. I mean, unless you spread the word that the Chamber of Commerce did this and then mm-hmm. you let people decide whether or not they want to, support them. But that's also counterproductive. I mean, it's about a street festival, right? I mean, this is mm-hmm. about community and, it's sort of a happy thing. So, it's a very awkward situation.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I think it's one of those things where I think it's worth the while of the individual who called us to maybe get in touch with the Chamber again and go have a face-to-face chat about it, just to see if maybe there's a way to still be involved if you want to be involved. Because at the end of the day, Sarah, I think what we see in situations like this is even though the Chamber wants to take it over, the reality is they may not have staff to be able to manage it or people who are passionate about managing it. And so the page could end up just losing all of the stickiness that it has now and that has been built over the past little while. So I'd recommend, one more time trying to get in touch with them. And if possible, if there aren't too many hard feelings, try to do it face-to-face. Because at the end of the day, emails going back and forth or messages on social networks, sometimes, I think people really have a hard time coming to an agreement on certain things like this. But maybe just a quick little meeting and seeing if there's a way to still be involved. That's what I'd recommend, take the higher ground here if possible.
Yeah, maybe there's a conversation to be had where the folks that cared enough to put together the page in the first place could still have an active role in keeping it updated or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Yeah, and you know what? If there's anyone else who's had a similar situation, because I know I have heard about this, like I mentioned, particularly with brands, and you had any feedback about how there was a positive outcome, we would definitely love to hear about that. So send us an email or tweet us and let us know about that.
Absolutely. I mentioned earlier in the show that I wanted to get back a little bit to, you know, when Facebook is a good network and when it isn't. Simone wrote in, said, "Hi, Sarah and Amber. Love watching your show. I live all the way in New Zealand and I have a question. As high profile people in social media, which platforms do you actually use to keep in touch with your friends and your family? While most of us would use Facebook or Twitter, the volume of mentions and comments you must both receive probably means you're forced to either use other channels for keeping in touch with people close to you. I've always wondered how people who have a huge volume of incoming messages and tweets can filter through all of these to find the ones they don't want to miss." Well, first of all, thanks, Simone, for saying that we're high profile. there are certainly tiers of that. I think Amber and I probably fall somewhere in the middle. But yeah, I think this is actually this. It's funny because I have a very specific way that I do most of my communicating with my family, at least one side of my family, and that is a Facebook group, which is closed to everybody but members of my family. But we do pretty much, you know, pictures from events that maybe not everybody went to or that we'd like to share, or, you know, somebody's having a baby and it's a great way to just sort of alert, you know, the extended family. Facebook group for a family, I think, is one of the best uses of Facebook that I can think of. And often it's the only thing that I really care about. And the reason that I'm checking Facebook regularly, you know, I really look forward to those updates because it's so specific. Amber, do you have any groups like that within Facebook that you think work really well?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, not necessarily a Facebook group, but anytime we do any type of event with our family, we always use Facebook to organize the event, because I think it's pretty much the only social network where almost everybody in our family is on it, or their mom or dad or sons or daughters are on it. So at the end of the day, everybody will find out about that particular event happening. So I'd say Facebook for events that take place that involve our family. For any other type of communication, for me with my really close circle of friends, it really is just texting. I find Twitter and Facebook, I don't want to say I miss things, but I often tell people if they're having, you know, some type of party or they want to connect with me, texting is the best way, or just sending an email. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. No magic recipe there.
Yeah, I think, you know, Simone is probably thinking, well, you know, if you tweet something, you're going to get all these replies. And what if your mom replies? And how do you filter through all of that? I find that Twitter is still the place that I, certainly with friends, but then, you know, I've got certain friends who are on Twitter and certain friends who aren't. So it'd be hard to say, oh, this is how I talk to my friends, because it really depends on how tech savvy and interested they are in all of these tools. But as far as family goes, nobody's on Twitter. Everybody's on Facebook, that's for sure. And if somebody needs to privately get a hold of me on Twitter or make sure that I don't miss a message, then a DM is the way to go. You know, sometimes friends will send me something, or, you know, there's maybe something that's, it's just really not for the public channel, but I know that they'll see it right away, and I'll send them a direct message on Twitter, and I know that, you know, they'll get it, and they probably have notifications on, and you know, that'll be something that they're sure not to miss. So certainly some options there, but I'm with you, Amber. When it comes to events and especially sort of corralling a group into anything, often Facebook is the best place just because everybody's already there. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I will say, like you, Sarah, direct messages on Twitter have saved me in many cases, because I feel as though what I love about them is the fact that they're so short, so people get right to the point. So I tend to be much quicker in many ways answering a direct message than I would be answering an email. I probably shouldn't say that out loud on the show. But nonetheless, that tends to be a really great way, I find, to stay in touch with people, especially if it's something important, because I think with direct messages, it's not like emails I may get or Facebook messages like, "Hey, how are you doing? How are things?" You know, I don't know when I will have time to answer that email, but it may never, ever happen.
Yeah.
Just so right. Everyone knows. But DM on Twitter, you know, people tend to do that because they have something direct that they want to get to you, and it needs a response, and you only have so many characters. And I love that. So big fan.
Big fan too. Love the DMs. Love
yes,
them.
And another thing I'm a big fan of, Sarah, we didn't want to go a week without talking about Sharknado, which was a meme a couple of weeks ago because of the movie about the shark tornado that everybody was loving on social media. I don't know if they actually love the movie, but it was kind of made for the social media space in many ways. And if I'm reading this article correctly, and I'm not sure, Sarah, so I hopefully you've read it over, it looks as though Sharknado is hitting movie theaters tonight. This is Friday when we're recording this. So Friday night, it will hit 200 movie theaters. And I've read this a couple of times to see if this is the real thing, or this special viewing of Sharknado because of the popularity of it, particularly in the online space. And it looks like a meme has gone to the movie theater. Maybe not the first time, but it's an original approach, definitely, for marketing of a movie like this.
But it's perfect, right? I mean, so this is a midnight yes. movie screening. And, you know, midnight movie screenings are just because they're so late. By nature, they're kind of, you know, giddy and exciting. I mean, that's when a lot of movies open, you know, big blockbuster movies. You know, people will wait in line to see the midnight showing. But this is a little bit different, right? I mean, this is like this ridiculous movie that went viral and everyone just loves the idea of, you know, a tornado made of sharks. So why not make some money? Let's see, they're working with Regal Edwards and UA Movie Theaters. It's a midnight screening, one night only. I can see a lot of teenagers and, you know, big groups of people being like, let's just be silly and go to the theater and spend some money. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I think it's fun. And you know what? If there's anyone who's listening who is going to see Sharknado tonight, we would love to know, get a full report on that. Very, very interesting to see this different approach to movie marketing. And I doubt it will be the first time. Look at, I think it's Grumpy Cat and, oh my gosh, what is our other cat friend we had on, Sarah?
Lil Bub.
Is that going to be a movie or just an online video series?
Well, Lil Bub has a movie, but Grumpy Cat is featured in that movie. It's a documentary. And then Lil Bub does have her own show launching with Revision 3, another internet television network, where she's going to be interviewing celebrities, as we were told by Lil Bub's dad just a few weeks ago on the show.
Very interesting. Sharknados and cats. That's why you have to watch The Social Hour. You're not going to get this anywhere else.
Nope. This is your one-stop shop for everything that's the best.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you want to get a hold of us, whether you have ideas for what we should talk about next week, whether you have comments about what we talked about this week or anything else, we do want to hear from you. You can email us, thesocialhour@twit.tv. Amber and I are on Twitter dutifully, Amber Mack and Sarah Lane. You can always tweet at us. I think even if we have high volume for Twitter, we're pretty good at responding to people, Amber.
We are pretty good. I think we do a pretty good job on Twitter. In fact, I think Twitter is one of the best ways to reach out to us. Just it can be quick and I can keep Sarah in the loop. She can keep me in the loop. So if you have anything, please let us know on Twitter. And, you know, if you have a social media site, we can't keep track of all of the different things happening in social. So would love to know everything from digital marketing to how you use social media in your own life, whether it's personal or professional.
Yes, exactly. Leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL, like Daniel did this week. 2626-SOCIAL. That's our Google Voice mailbox. Leave us a message. Keep it to 30 seconds or less. You can record a video as well. Upload it somewhere. Send us the link. If you want to maybe do a little bit of a juggling act while you ask us a question, that would be awesome as well. And thanks in advance, everybody. You help us make the show every week, so thank you for that. All right, before we get to Amber's Rad or Fad, quickly, we want to thank Audible, last but definitely not least, of our sponsors for The Social Hour. Audible is the leading provider of audiobooks with over 100,000 downloadable titles, all types of genres, literature and fiction and nonfiction. No matter what kind of books you think you're into, Audible will definitely have a great selection for you. And the nice thing about audiobooks is you can consume them in places and situations where you couldn't actually sit down and read a book. When you're listening to an audiobook, you can be doing other stuff. Obviously, you have to be paying attention, but it's great for commutes or when you're at the gym or, you know, when you're grocery shopping, you know you're not going to be talking to anybody for a while. I mean, I've got my headphones in. Oh gosh, 60% of the day it feels like. And it's really nice to be able to be reading books. And Audible is absolutely the place for that. Of course, if you are a listener or a viewer of The Social Hour, we want to give you an extra incentive to get on the Audible train. Audible's offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. If you've never tried it out, you've got to take advantage of this. You can choose an audiobook, download the audiobook for free, and you know, just pretty much anything. Go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour to do so. Again, I mean, if it's might be an autobiography and maybe the author themselves is reading the book and it's like, wow, this is really neat. It's like story time here. Or, you know, maybe the Game of Thrones series. My mom just started those and she says, oh, they're so great and all the characters. And it really puts things into perspective. People love the Game of Thrones series on audiobook because really kind of lets your imagination run wild. You're hearing the story in your head. Again, audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. Any book, whatever book you like. At the end of your trial, you can sign up for an account for Audible. And no matter what you download or do not download in the future, that book that you get, it will always be yours. You get to keep it forever. You don't have to give it back. That is your downloaded book title. You can listen to it as many times as you want. Audible's great. Audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. And we thank Audible, as always, for sponsoring our little show. All right, Amber, what do we got for the rad or fad? Has to do with hotels?
Oh, Sarah, I know you love traveling, so I hope one day you will head over to Spain to go to the Twitter Hotel, because apparently this is the first hotel in the world that is entirely focused around having a good time and social media. So what's really interesting about this is that they focus the entire experience on using things like hashtags if you run out of beer in your bar fridge. Also, if you need other things, you can use hashtags to notify the hotel. There's a Twitter-like app that the hotel offers as soon as you check in, and it's almost like having a little social network within the hotel, so you can communicate with other people there. You can flirt with them. You can exchange messages with the hotel staff if you need anything. I don't know, Sarah. What do you think?
I think I would like this. I think it's a little silly, but I feel like it would be a really fun experiment.
I think so, too. And useful, right?
Yeah, I mean, why not? Why not see, hey, let's use these tools to try to have, you know, the most pleasant stay available to me. And I think in many cases, it would probably work out really well.
Yeah, I mean, especially for people who use Twitter all the time. I mean, I use Twitter more than anything else as far as other tools out there. So just the fact that I think based on this picture, there's a bar fridge on the photo on this particular article that says thirsty tweet, hashtag fill my fridge from within the hotel. I mean, there are so many ways where this could get really useful. And also for the hotels, imagine or this particular hotel, the opportunity for them to be able to make quite a bit of money because of the ease of using something like this with these hashtag suggestions and how quickly people can get anything they want. I'm sure anyone would end up spending quite a bit of money because of the ease of that.
Yeah, no kidding. So this is in Sweden, huh?
I think it's Spain. Spain.
Oh, Spain. Oh, even better.
Yeah, it's on the beach
in Spain.
Not that
I have anything against Sweden, but hey.
You tell Leo that I think he needs to send you here on a kind of a mission to get more information about the future of a social media experience like this.
Yeah, I will go to Spain. I will sacrifice myself on assignment for research. And, you know, I'm willing to take one for the team because it's, you know, for the good of the show. But yeah, I'm willing to do that, Amber. I'm willing to go to Spain for Twitter hotel. I love, yeah, this is great. This is
it's
fun. It's like, what? Who wouldn't want to try this out? Right? I guess unless you hate Twitter, but no, this is a good time. I wonder how the team at Twitter feels about this. They must love it.
Yeah, they must absolutely love it. I mean, it just seems like a really fun idea. And, you know, things like if there's a party at the pool, there's a certain hashtag people can use to notify other people in the hotel that there's something going on. I mean, this must be the most social hotel in the world just because of this, right? So many opportunities to get people to connect. So I have to say that I think it's kind of rad in many ways. I'm not saying I'm going to go right away, but I think it would be pretty fun. I think people here are probably having a better time as a group than most people staying in hotels around the world.
You know, some hotel chains more than others are kind of, you know, for a little bit of like the younger jet setter type of a thing. You know, the Ace hotel chain comes to mind. And I think that this is the sort of experiment that, you know, if it ends up sort of catching on, could really be implemented by all sorts of these types of hotel chains as actual services that, you know, might seem like gimmicky and fun, but end up being really, really useful and can help a hotel staff streamline keeping their guests as happy as possible.
Exactly, right? You know, how many times do you go to a hotel and you call housekeeping because you're missing something in the room, or you call room service? It happens all the time. And how do they keep track of it? It's someone answering the phone. Maybe they write it down on a piece of paper. If it was something that people did electronically through an app like this, I mean, it's kind of interesting. Just to clarify a little bit about how this works, basically you log on to Twitter through an app that's available only within the hotel's Wi-Fi. So you can contact other guests if you choose to and find out who's that in that network. So it's almost like they have created this closed network of people who are staying there, and you can participate in all type of activities. And I'm with you, Sarah. You know, it doesn't have to just be a party hotel. I think down the road, it's something that would really streamline a bunch of different responsibilities that people have in hotels, and it would make the whole service a lot better.
Agreed.
I'm a fan.
I love it. I think it's rad.
Yes.
Twitter
yes,
hotel.
It's very rad. Twitter hotel, sir. Next time we get together, I think we have to meet there.
Agreed. Let's do it. There'll be no more Petaluma for you and I. It's Spain or it's nothing.
It's nothing. You know what, though? Really, I think a hotel like this would work very well in San Francisco, don't you think?
Yes, I do. And in fact, I wonder if there are any hotels that for whatever reason just aren't on our radar yet that also are incorporating some of this stuff. There's got to be. I mean, not just in San Francisco, although this would be a great market for that. But yeah, if anybody knows any other hotel that's maybe implementing Twitter in creative ways, or anything else that seems a little bit like thinking outside the box of how hotels have traditionally worked, do let us know. It'd be cool to hear about various unique hotels in cities around the world.
Very cool. All right. So we have another rad. I feel as though we've had quite a few rads over the past few weeks, if I'm correct.
Yeah. Well, you're just picking a lot of winners, I guess.
A lot of cool stuff.
It's a good thing. I don't really want to ever have things that suck and I say are fads, but, you know, it'll happen eventually, I'm sure.
It will. But I think we've had a good run. And I think it just shows that many of the social technologies out there are just getting more sophisticated and more useful all the time and are just going to continue to improve. So that's good news for all of us. It's not getting worse in this world.
Absolutely. And that's a good, you know, this is a good note to end the show on, because we are just optimistic about the future. Social networking helps bring us together, makes our hotel stays more enjoyable.
It's all good.
So that's it for this episode of The Social Hour. It has been an hour, so, you know, it's kind of when we decide to wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for watching and listening live and on demand. We love all you all. Remember, we're live on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Amber and I are rarely in the same place, but we're always here. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. It's where you can keep up with all of our past shows and subscribe to future shows. And until next Friday, when we'll be back here, I'll actually be back in Petaluma, so it's going to seem a little bit more normal. Although, Amber, you'll still be in Prince Edward Island,
here,
isn't that right?
Yeah, I'll be here for one more week, and then back in Toronto in my little studio the following week. So I will see you here next week with all of my wood paneling glory.
Excellent. Until then, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.